Well, what will you do with Jesus? That's the title of the series of lessons in this gospel meeting. What will you do with Jesus? And the lesson this morning, my answer to that is, I want to live the kind of life that Jesus wants me to live. Now, there's a lot of places you can turn to in the Bible to tell you how you ought to live. In fact, why don't you tell me where you would turn to in the Bible to find out how Jesus wants you to live? Please help me or I'll go to preaching. You don't want me to do that, okay? Where would you turn to? What? Well, let's get a little more specific, Roger. I mean, you're right. I agree with that. Well, the Gospels, okay. Yeah, I think Jesus laying down the foundation for the church and telling people how to live, certainly. In Matthew 5, 6, and 7, the Sermon on the Mount, where else would you turn?
1 Peter 3,
you're right. You're right. 1 Peter 3. Where else would you look? Y'all not having much. I'm going to go to preaching, I'm telling you. Where else would you turn to in the Bible? What?
Romans 12, 1 and 2.
Okay, Romans chapter 12. That's a good place to turn to.
Isaiah.
We talked about Isaiah, didn't we? Okay. Where else? How about the book of Proverbs? How many times in Proverbs do you see that expression, my son? You see the father instructing the son on how to live, how to keep himself sexually pure, how to stay away from alcohol, how to live the kind of life that God wants him to live. Where else would you turn to in the Scriptures? You know, there's if you go to a bookstore, and there are still some bookstores, not many, they're about gone. But if you go to a bookstore and you walk in and you see all aisles of books down through there, you're going to see a section called self-help. In fact, there's going to be thousands probably of books on self-help. But I'll tell you what, if you want to help yourself, this is the book. This is it right here. Romans chapter 12 is where we're going. You will turn over there. Let's begin our study at that point. Romans chapter 12. As we look at how Jesus wants us to live our lives for Him. There's points we'll make in different ways. But I think this is a great place to start. Romans chapter 12. And we'll begin with verses 1 and 2. I think that's what Roger said. Do you read my mind or read my notes? Which is it? Good. I beseech you, therefore, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. He says, I beseech you, I beg you, by the mercies of God, that you present your body as a living sacrifice. What kind of sacrifice is offered in the Old Testament? Animals. And what did all those animals have in common?
What?
They were all killed, weren't they? They were dead sacrifices, right? But he says, you're to be a living sacrifice. Now, there's a big difference between a living sacrifice and a dead sacrifice. That dead sacrifice cannot crawl off the altar, can it? But a living sacrifice can. And especially when it gets real hot, you can crawl off the altar. And so we're to be a living sacrifice. We're to live our lives every day in service to our Lord. You remember Jesus in Matthew said, if anyone comes after me and denies, I'll take up his cross and follow me. But Luke changes that just a little bit. In Luke chapter 9, he has one word. What is it? You recall? If any man will come after me, let him take up his cross how? Daily. And so a living sacrifice is one who takes up his cross daily and serves the Lord. Every day he does that, or she does that. That's the life that we live, a life of sacrifice to God. Present your body as a living sacrifice, holy. That means morally blameless. and acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Now, what is this reasonable service business?
Spiritual.
It is a spiritual service. What do you think about when you think about the word reasonable? Logical? Acceptable? Okay. You go to buy a new car. And you go to dealer number one and you pick out that car and you get a price on it. And you say, man, that's too much. And you go to dealership number two and you say, that's too much. And you go to, if you're like me, you really don't like to spend money. I'm real tight, try all I can on cars especially. But finally, when I find one, and I think the price is right, I would say, well, that's reasonable. That's kind of what I expected to pay. And so your reasonable service is what God expects out of you. Your service needs to be logical. That's one of the terms, what is expected. And do not be conformed to this world. What does the word conform mean? Y'all not talking again, Mom. Okay, to form or mold. To take the shape of. Now, if your children or grandchildren want a Mickey Mouse cake for their birthday, do you get a pan that looks like a bunny rabbit? No, because when you mix that batter up and put it in that pan, it's going to look like a bunny rabbit when it comes out. You see, the cake mix will conform to the pan. It'll take the shape of. Do not be conformed to what? The world. Don't be like the world. We are to be different. We are to act different, talk different, dress different. We're to be different from the world. Do not be conformed to the world, but be transformed. Now, what does transform mean? Changed. Yeah. What does a transformer do up on the pole? It transforms that power. I don't know how much is on those lines up there. Some of you may know. Maybe thousands of volts. I don't know. But it transforms it down to something you can use in your house. It changes. By the way, the Greek word there is metamorpho. And we understand that concept of metamorphosis because we went to the seventh grade. And we learned about metamorphosis. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. There was a young man, well, he's 50, I guess, now, so he's still young. He came to visit us last Sunday night where I preached. I hadn't seen him in several years. But he attended where I preached for several years. And he said, Frank, while you were preaching, he said, I thought of something that you've always said. And I've said this so many times that most of the people that know me will quote this. Christianity is a brain thing. Okay? Christianity is a brain thing. You don't get your brain in gear, the body's not going to follow. So we have to get our mind right. We have to get our brains right. We need to renew our mind that you may prove what is good and acceptable. Now, we have a saying, I guess you have the same saying here, the proof is in what? In the pudding. That's exactly right. Proof's in the pudding. What does that mean?
When it's done, you taste it.
You taste it. And then you decide whether it's good or not, right? That's the proof. You're right. My wife makes pretty good banana pudding. And a few years ago, she made a banana pudding. And I ate it, and boy, it's good. She said, how'd that taste? And I said, it tasted good. She said, did you notice anything different about it? And I said, no. She said, I left the bananas out. I didn't even notice it. Banana pudding without bananas. Think about that. Well, the proof is in the pudding. What is good and acceptable and perfect will of God? I've got a bunch of terms I could use that you could fill in about these two verses: humiliation, motivation, dedication, obligation, non-confirmation, demonstration, transformation. All that's included in those first two verses. So Paul is dealing with the Christian life, how we're to live our lives, how we're to think and act, and we are to be different from the world. We must be transformed into spiritual beings. And a spiritual being is different from the physical being. We all have spirits. And sometimes we allow the body to overrule the spirit. The spirit needs to overrule the body. Okay. All right. But that gets us to verse 3. What time are we going to quit? What? Quarter after? I ain't got 30 minutes left. I only got 2 verses. Okay. Verse 3. For I say through the grace given to me to everyone who is among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. Now, did you see that? He said not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. You think that's a problem in our society today? Everybody do this. Yeah, that's a problem. That's a real problem. Several years ago, I heard a preacher talking about, it was in Columbia, I think. He said they had an expression there for a person who bragged. And the expression was, he does not need a grandmother. You see, every one of your grandmothers got pictures of your grandbabies. You're quick to show them, aren't you? Well, if you brag, you don't need a grandmother. You don't need anybody to brag on you. You're doing it for yourself. Stories told of two preachers at a gospel meeting sitting there talking to each other. Another gospel preacher walked in. And one of the gospel preachers sitting there, he kind of nudged the guy next to him and he said, is he as good a preacher as me? And the other one said, well, yeah, he's probably as good as you, but he's not as good as me. You think preachers have problems with this? You think there are preachers that think more highly of themselves than they ought to think? We mentioned one of our brethren that I were talking about the other day, and mentioned to me a story, and he never did tell me who the preacher was, but I tell you what, my attitude toward that preacher was not real good. He said that they had set up a gospel meeting and said before the preacher came, said he sent word to the church and he said, listen, I want to stay in a hotel. I'm not staying in anybody's house and I want a nice place to stay. And he said, I need a car to drive and I don't want that old secondhand car that somebody's got sitting in their yard that they don't want to drive. I want a new car. And he went on down the list of all these things. He was demanded to come and preach the gospel. And all I could think of was what our elders would have had to say to that fellow. Maybe you ought to find some other place to have a meeting because you're not coming here. I tell you what, when preachers get to the point that they think they're better than the person in the pew, there's something wrong with that preacher. So preachers have that problem. It seems like everybody has that problem. We have an expression, it's called, I'd like to buy him for what he's worth and sell him for what? What he thinks he's worth. And there's a lot of people out there that think more highly of themselves than they ought to. Not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, verse 3. Now, I tell you what, you got to couple this with another passage. Turn over to Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4. There's Romans 3 and Philippians 2, 3. Romans 12, 3 and Philippians 2, 3 say the same thing. Notice this. Let nothing be done through selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others. Wait a minute. How? Better than himself. Did you say that? You reckon that's a problem among Christians today? I'm afraid it might be. And what we see in this passage, and couple that with Romans 12, verse 3, is that God is saying, you need to see yourself as here and everybody else here. Boy, that's hard for us to grasp. I'll tell you what, that'd solve a lot of problems, wouldn't it? What if all the married couples, if the one person would see themselves as here, but see their mate as being here. And they would see their mate as being here, and here, and here. And it would grow into something absolutely beautiful. But no, we want to think we're better than the other person. And that's just not the case. And when you get to that position, that attitude in life, it causes problems. But if you would adhere to these verses, Romans 12:3, Philippians 2:3, we just solve so many problems in our society. It would solve the problem of school violence. Several years ago, I don't know how this happened, but I guess because I was in education, I got on the circuit of going to churches and talking about school violence. I was invited to come to a number of places. I tell you what a lot of people don't understand about school violence. They say, I can't believe all this is going on. But I want to tell you, schools mirror society. Did you get that? Schools mirror society. You look at what's going on in our society. You look at just this past week. Somebody killing babies in a preschool thing. It's amazing. Well, why do we have this problem with school violence? And I can think of a number of situations. I can think about April the 20th, 1997, when Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold killed 13 people and wounded 23 at Columbine High School. Do you know why they did that? Do you know who they were looking for? Do you have any idea? They were looking for the athletes. Why do you think they were looking for athletes to kill? Anybody?
Jealousy?
What else you think? Anybody? Tell you why. Because these athletes had been putting them down, and they said, we're not taking it anymore. And then went to school and started blowing people away. Same thing we're talking about here in Romans chapter 12, verse 3. Esteem others better than yourself. And all these athletes were going around putting down these guys. You know, they were just run-of-the-mill folks. They said they weren't going to take it anymore. October the 1st, 1997, Luke Woodham in Pearl, Mississippi, shot 9. Two of them died. There's been a number of cases since then. Situation down in Florida, of course, really made the news this year. There's a lot of violence in the schools. But I'll tell you what, a lot of it goes back to the fact that we don't realize that we need to put others above ourselves. We can solve a lot of problems by doing that. Solve the problem of school violence, solve the problem of spouse abuse. It solved the problem of elder abuse. You know, we have 2.3 million elderly people abused in this country every year. Do you know who does it? Yeah. Their children, usually. Family members are the ones that do it. Solve the problem of child abuse. Solve the problem of pride. Solve the problem of envy. Solve the problem of preeminence. And I think sometimes we get wrapped up in this thing and we get to thinking just how sharp we are. And I learned a long time ago I wasn't real sharp. And I'll tell you what really drove that home for me. I had received a Fulbright Fellowship to study in Egypt, which was a pretty big deal. And I was in my 20s still, and I thought I had it going on. I had 3 college degrees and I had a good job and I had good money. Now I'm a recipient of a Fulbright Fellowship to Egypt. And so I went to Egypt and I went to the pyramids, and there was a little camel boy there, 14 years old, and he was in charge of a camel. He said, do you want to ride the camel? And I said, no, we'd be back before find out I rode the camel. So I got on the camel and we're riding down through there, and I said to this boy, how many languages do you speak? And he said, English, French, German, and Arabic. And I said, how long did you go to school? And he said, I've never been to school a day in my life. And I realized this kid was a whole lot smarter than me. A lot of times we put our trust in our education. We put our trust in our bank accounts. We put our trust in the positions we hold. Maybe because of the car we drive or the house we live in, we think we got it going on. And I'll tell you what, that's the wrong attitude. And we need to get away from it. Okay. Verse 16. We're going to skip over to Romans 12, verse 16. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion. What did he just say? You're not the sharpest knife in the drawer. Okay? Maybe you forgot your upbringing. You got to thinking you're a little better than what you are. One time I came home from a parent-teacher meeting. We had all the parents come to school. And I came home and I told my wife, I said, there was a lady there tonight. And she came up to me and she was just praising me. And she said, oh, Mr. Richie, my son just thinks so much of you. And he appreciates you so much. And I said to my wife, do you know what I do for that kid? She said, no. I said, when I get to school in the morning, I say, good morning, John. How are you? And the next morning I say, hey, John, you beat me to school again today. Just something simple. And he goes home and tells his mama what a great guy. And all I did was say hello. I learned a lesson from that. We need to be nice to people. In fact, this whole chapter can be summarized, just be nice to people. Stephen was mentally and physically challenged. He was a special ed kid. Had trouble walking. And he was at school and he was sitting in the lunchroom by himself. And I tell you what, if you ever see a child sitting in the lunchroom by himself, there's a problem. And I'm two tables away and I look back there and Stephen starts crying. Tears just run down his face. And over here is a table of football players. And one of them gets up and comes over there to Stephen. You think he can finish this story? He put his arm around him. And he said, Stephen, what's the problem? And Stephen said, I spill my milk in my chicken fingers. Now, chicken fingers is a big deal at school. You may not know that. That's a big deal. And Johnny said, get your plate and come over here with me. And he went over to that table for all those football players. And he said, you guys clear out, put another chair in here. Stephen's going to eat lunch with us today. And a minute or two later, he was laughing and happy because somebody had just been nice to him. After lunch that day, we were upstairs in the hallway. Miss Gray, one of the math teachers, saw Johnny. She said, Johnny, that was a wonderful thing you did at lunch today. And I never will forget what he said. He said, well, Miss Gray, you know everybody needs somebody sometime. Put that in your memory box, okay? Everybody needs somebody sometime. And one of the real problems with our young people, I'm going to talk to you, is that you don't do that. I was asked to come to the church 20 years ago. The preacher said, Frank, we've got a problem in our church. Our young people are in cliques. That should never be a term used to describe a young Christian. You can change the life of somebody by reaching down and helping them up, picking their books up off the floor when they drop them instead of laughing at them. Picking up their papers when they're scattered somewhere. Just be nice to people and you'll solve a lot of problems in this life. He says, associate with the humble. You're not Mr. Big Stuff. You're not the sharpest knife in the drawer. Don't get to thinking more highly of yourself than you ought to think. Okay, let's move on. All right, our second point is consider yourself as a member of the body of Christ. We're going to go back to verse 4, Romans 12, verse 4. And notice what he says here. For as we have many members in one body, but all the members do not have the same function, so we being many are one body and Christ and individually members of one another. What did he just say? We are all what? We're all different. We're all different. But we're all in one body. And the one body is the church. And everybody in here is different. And there's people in here that have a lot more talent than I do in so many areas. And let me just give you an example of that. I don't like leading public prayer. I told that to somebody one time. Let me pray about that. I said, yeah, I do. And I don't know what it is about churches and elders and some local preachers. When they have gospel meetings, they always call on the visiting preacher to lead prayer. I don't know how many times I've gone to a gospel meeting and it was 10 till 7 and I rode up the road 5 more minutes to come back so I could walk in the door and hope they wouldn't call on me to lead prayer. Because I wanted to come in and sit down and listen instead of worrying about that. I don't know why I've got that problem, but I've got that problem. I hadn't solved it yet. Several years ago, I'd gone to a gospel meeting. I came in and sat down and Lonnie Oldag came back there and said, Frank, would you lead a prayer for us? Okay. He said, would you lead the closing prayer? Yeah. No, he said the first prayer. And my thought was, yeah, if I go ahead and lead the first prayer, then I can concentrate on what's going on. So the time came, you know, after the second song or whatever, and I got up and led the prayer, and I was walking back to my chair, back to my pew. And there was a little boy sitting in the pew right in front of me, and he was sitting right on the end, and he was 3 years old. And he had red hair. I never will forget this little boy. And as I was walking back up here to sit down about behind Roger, this little old boy stuck his hand out to give me 5, and I slapped it, so I went by, and he said, good job. And I said, that's the greatest thing anybody ever said to me. Wow. It doesn't take much to encourage people. That little boy encouraged me. Verses 6 through 8, having then gifts differing according to the grace that's given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith. Our ministry, let us use it in our ministering. He who teaches in teaching, he who exhorts in exhortation, he who gives with liberality, he who leads with diligence, who shows mercy with cheerfulness. He says, do what you can do. Okay? That's all you have to do. Now, one time several years ago, this was even after I retired, I went to the gym and you had to log in on the computer and it kept up with what you did. I walked in there one day and I logged in and things started flashing. There was fireworks and all this. And it said, congratulations, Frank. You have lifted 6 million pounds. And then below it, it said, that's the equivalent of 750 elephants. You didn't know I was that powerful, did you? Well, I have trouble picking up a cat. I'm not a strong person. What's the point? Just a little bit every day or 3 times a week. You just chip at it. You add to it. You add to it. You add to it. And you can accomplish something. How wonderful that is. Okay. Let's go down to verse 12. We're having to skip a lot of information here. Be kindly affectionate to one another in brotherly love and honor, giving preference to one another. What does that mean? I didn't have a clue what that meant for a long, long time. What it means is, it doesn't have to be done your way. It doesn't have to be done your way. The way somebody else does it may be right, might even be better. But we have this mindset of my way or the highway. And there's something wrong with that mindset. Verse 16, be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion. King James Version says, condescend to men of low estate. That's the reason I went with another version. I didn't have a clue what that meant. Condescend to men of low estate. You know what that means? Usually when you think of somebody being condescending, it has a real negative thought attached to it. No. He's saying you bring yourself down to that other person. You bring yourself down to the level of that person. If you perceive that their level's not yours, you come down here. And you'll be on the same level with that person. Okay. Number 3, consider yourself in respect to evil and good. Verse 12, let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil, cling to what is good. And there's a lot of things we need to cling to. We need to abhor evil thinking. We need to cleave to the good seed. We need to cleave to the good shepherd. There's so many points that we can make in all this. We need to cleave to good people. 1 Corinthians 15:33. Do not be deceived. Evil company corrupts good habits. Young people, be careful who you run around with. And old folks, Be careful who you run around with, because they'll have an affection. Let me tell you about David. David was one of my students. And boy, he was a good kid. His brother was a Methodist minister. Good family. Oh, I really love the family. And David went through school. We never had any problems out of David. A good kid. He graduated from high school and pretty soon got married out of high school. Got him a job, got married, and they had a baby. And David lived in this housing apartment complex near us there at the school, and he got to drinking. And there's a couple other guys lived in the apartments there that drank too, and they got to where they ride around drinking. One day, they were riding around drinking, and the guy driving and the guy in the back seat got to argue with each other. David was sitting in the front seat beside the driver. And the guy in the front seat and the guy in the back seat were arguing with each other. And the guy in the front seat pulled out a gun and shot the guy in the back and killed him. In the back seat and killed him. And then he told David, "You're going to help me hide the body." And so they went out there on the side of Highway 72 in a new subdivision that had been stalled. And there was a manhole out there, and they dropped the body down that manhole. David was a good kid. Good young man. And it was driving him absolutely crazy, knowing what had happened. The guy said, "You ever tell anybody, I'll kill your wife and I'll kill your baby." And he's got to deal with this. About 2 months later, David finally went to the police and told him where the body was. He couldn't live with himself any longer. That guy was arrested and tried and sent to prison. But that's a lesson to us. Cleave to good people. Evil company corrupts good habits. We need to be careful who we associate with, who we run around with. Okay, number four. Consider yourself as pertaining to your work. What kind of worker are you? Verse 11, not lacking in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. I tell you what, we need to learn the lesson that when we go to work every day, we're serving the Lord. We're working for the Lord. Not just the boss. A lot of people don't get that. Brother Thurlow Ferguson told me one time, he said, "You know, at work," said, "at the plant, if so-and-so ever said, 'Let me have that wrench and do that,' you knew he'd spotted the boss. But he wasn't going to do anything unless the boss was showing up." That's not the kind of people we ought to be. We ought to be the one with the wrench and maybe surrendering it when somebody else wants it. Colossians 3:22, "Bondservants, obey in all things your masters according to flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God." And in Titus 2, verse 10, "not pilfering." What is pilfering? You reckon the military has a problem with people pilfering? You know what they mean? Huh? Stealing little things, right? I mean, nothing big, you know, little things. I used to say I knew where kids' parents worked because of the writing instrument they used at school. If they had that gray pencil, their parents worked at Reynolds. Because Reynolds had those gray pencils. And if they had those black pens, they worked at TVA because TVA had those black pens. People always bringing things home from work. Not pilfering! That's not us. How do you suppose people steal from their employers today, big time? Time doing what? On the internet. Yeah. They can't wait Monday after Thanksgiving to get on the internet at work and spend an hour or two ordering something they don't need. And they're stealing time from the boss, from the company, from their employer. But that goes on all the time. Okay, verse 12. He says, "Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfast in prayer." What is hope?
Desire plus expectation.
Desire plus expectation. Exactly. Hope is desire plus expectation, and it's that which happens in the future. And we need to get the hang of that. Okay. Number six, consider yourself in respect to the needy. Verses 13 through 15. "Distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality, bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse, rejoice with those who rejoice, and weep with those who weep." He says we're to be given to what? Hospitality. I was asked to come speak to a church in Athens back in June, I guess it was, about 200 members, and they asked me to come speak on hospitality in their vacation Bible school, and I did. And the next night, one of the preachers showed up at lectureship at College View where I was, and he said, "Do you know why we asked you to preach on hospitality?" I said, "I don't have a clue." He said, "Because we had a gospel meeting. We didn't even have enough people to sign up to feed the preacher. 200 people. Hospitality." I have written in my notes the biggest problem in the church today is lack of hospitality. And I taught that for years, and then it hit me. That's not the biggest problem in the church. The biggest problem in the church is we don't go out and teach people. The second biggest problem is we don't practice hospitality. And I'm not sure we get it. I think about situations I'm aware of. And I mentioned this the other day. Sister Hazel Pounders invited us to Sunday lunch one time. We couldn't go. We couldn't go get another appointment. And Sister Pounders, 87 years old, invited us down the road, and they came up and ate Sunday dinner with them. Sister Pounders washed the dishes and sat down in her rocking chair and died. Last thing she ever did was show hospitality. And people half her age can't do that. Oh, the house not good enough, all these excuses. That's my lesson on hospitality. Can't get into all that. But I'm reminded of what Brother Carl Gilbert said. He preached down in Franklin County for a number of years. He said, you know, back years ago, said we didn't have any money at all. He said, but every Sunday night, we'd go over to Brother Ezell's house, Brother Louis Ezell's house, and he said, we'd have potted meat and crackers and Kool-Aid. Folks today don't even know what Kool-Aid and potted meat are. And he said, we had some of the best times you could ever have. You don't have to have money. You just have to be willing. I remind the Suarez family. When I was, which country was it in? Belize. And the Suarez family had 9 children. And their house was the same size as your garage. And twice in 2 weeks they had us into their home. And the first time we had rice and beans. The second time we had beans and rice. And I'll tell you what, that's the best meals I've ever had. Rice and beans and beans and rice. Because of the love that was shown toward us and the love that was shown toward each other in that home. And Brother Suarez was a cane cutter. He made $4,600 a year. He didn't have any money. But he had a heart. And he wanted to help other people. All right. How much time? Are we about there? Okay. I have never finished this lesson. I thought I was going to finish today. I had 45 minutes. Consider yourself in respect to others. Look at verse 17 through 21. Repay no one evil for evil, having regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. Might not be possible, but if possible, do that. Do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it's written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he's thirsty, give him drink, for in so doing you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. This is a quote from Proverbs 25, and Paul leaves out the last verse, which said, and the Lord will reward you. Oh, does this describe the kind of life that we're living? I used to watch Hee Haw. Somebody remember Hee Haw? Y'all remember? And Roy Clark. He was playing. And one time on one of the shows there, they said, Roy, what do you want put on your tombstone? And he thought of it. He said, he done good. What more could you want on your tombstone? What more could you want out of an epitaph? He done good. Folks, I hope all of us will do good. Thank you for your attention.